Django, I've got my game prepared for us.
Oh, you got a game too. All right.
It's a
We got three
Django-centric
games
game.
here. Oh, no. Roman, I hope you've been thinking about a game to play.
I want to play a game. Grab the ice cream. Drip it from your mouth onto my chest hair. Yes. Now tell me I've been bad. You've lived your whole life dripping ice cream onto the ground without any awareness of the fact that it could go on a man's chest.
Good one.
Comics Place presents a perfectly acceptable podcast. This is episode 350, and we are coming in hot like a sweating falcon. We are dive bombing towards the water to fill these gullet beaks up with gooey ducks and fish that you wouldn't even fathom. All right? I'm going to swallow a Viking bear whale on my way down there.
I'm going to swallow a whale bear Viking on my way down there.
I'm going to swallow a big old hairy muscular crueler.
Good job, everyone. We didn't say anything inappropriate there. That's good. I'm Jeff. That's Django. That's Roman. This is very exciting. This is episode 350, a comic book podcast geared towards reading every single book that comes out every single week and then talking about the same 14 every week. Of course, the same 14 every month.
The same 14 written by someone named Tom.
Yes, probably a Tom. And there would be more Hickmans and Jonathans and Morrisons, but not so much today, Dave. Thank you for being with us for 350 episodes. Thank you for giving us a breather moment last week. Django was gone, and there was no way in hell Roman and I were going to record episode 350 without clearly the captain of this ship, the man of the hour, Django. My Scorpio baby, how are you on your birthday week?
Well, this week, the week of my birthday, I, as a Scorpio, have been celebrating Free Comic Book Day.
Yes.
And my glorious return to Washington State from the middle of the country.
You went to C2E2, Django. What was your favorite comic thing that happened at C2E2?
Oh, man. In the convention, it was probably hanging out with Douglas Paskowitz. Yeah, Paskowitz, I think, who did Arsenic Lullaby, and watching him draw the shadow for my sketchbook. Yeah, just lots of cool fun with creators and retailer friends.
Django, it's so awesome that like you just have a go-to sketch character.
It's
like
yeah.
You are the shadow fan of my entire existence. Like it just that's so cool that you could do that. For me, it's like what cool kind of meta thing do I want to try and do right now, and which there's no continuity to at all. It's just like me trying to capitalize on my interests at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I could probably pick from three or four different characters, but I think the shadow is the way to go.
Awesome. And of your life, and to have if you yeah. You know, could have a art book of bunch of commissioned sketches, that'd be really, really cool.
I got a book with space for 24 of them, and with the number of cons we've been going to lately, I think I'll be able to fill that up pretty quick.
I want mine to be the Green Goblin. That's who I have settled on as wanting to be my commission. I got this cool little art sketch by Gavin Guidry that I love, that was the closest thing he had to Green Goblin, which is Spider-Man staring at Green Goblin's hand with a pumpkin bomb in it.
That's awesome.
And check this out. This is an old picture of my dad.
Wow.
Isn't that
weird?
Your
dad was a wizard.
Yeah, he was a wizard. He had costumes, man.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I said Paskowitz, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
But you did stumble and look around for it.
Yeah, it's a word with a lot of sharp letters in it. And there's like seven different suffixes that always go through my head when I'm trying to say his
name.
I think I said it wrong on the podcast a while ago.
I'm really excited to get in here and bust out Elmer's email. So let's just make sure I've got audio sharing privileges for that while I'm getting in here.
I mean, you generally do, right?
Yeah, like, I didn't just when I tried a second ago, but you have been gaslamping me like a precious angel. So
sometimes you do. Yeah. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you feel like sharing audio, and sometimes you don't feel like sharing audio with Jeff.
That's true. I get it.
Hello and happy episode number 350, my friends. Hey, to celebrate episode 350 today, this question is inspired by Django. What are your top 350 favorite comics of all time?
Yeah.
I'm just kidding.
Oh, that would, motherfucker.
You guys would just skip this question completely. Actually, yesterday was Free Comic Book Day. Today was Free Comic Book Day Part 2. I had a blast helping you guys out there yesterday. I got to see the Kipster. That makes everything totally worth it, but also a lot of smiling faces. And when we started the day yesterday, Jeff asked a question of a bunch of the shop employees, the shop team there, if they remember their first day at the comics place. And of course I do. I was greeted by a young, handsome Jeff Figley, who reintroduced himself to me. Of course, I couldn't forget him after our time together slinging pizza back in the day. But I'm curious if all of you guys, Jeff, Django, Roman, if anybody else is joining today, remembers your first day at the comics place. And if you could tell us a little bit about it. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome. And congrats on 350. Really do love you.
Will, thank you so much. I'm going to pause the joking for about 3 seconds. Only three seconds. You and Andrew, our wonderful editor, thank you for always editing, Andrew. Andrew and Will.
Especially that thing you said before.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Monitored the door for all of Free Comic Book Day, pretty much. And monitoring the door is a not exciting way of saying something that is very important, which is putting two people at the doorway. The first people that just any Joe Schmo or Shannon Schmo would hit as they come into our comic shop, that was Will and Andrew. Mm-hmm. And being able to be ambassadors of enthusiasm and kindness and make people feel welcome is incredibly important to me on the day like that. And both of them just knocked it out of the park. So a huge debt of gratitude to both of them. So Django, 350 Bat comics. Yeah, go.
I would say Legends of the Dark Knight issue 1, Legends of the Dark Knight issue 2.
So
Legends of the Dark Knight issue 3.
I think I shared my first comic place memory with the Batman in Quarantine podcast, but I'm going to mention it. I wanted to go around to a lot of the non-main players at the comics place when we circled up with all of our arms around each other yesterday before opening and see who remembered their first time in the shop, and everyone I asked did and told me a little bit about it. And I wanted to reiterate that today is going to be a lot of people's first time in the shop, and they're going to remember it forever. So let's make sure it's real good for them. My first time, I've told the story, I was a freshman in college, having just moved to Bellingham, and I was using StumbleUpon, that old cool thing.
Mm.
They just took you to a random website page based on your preferences, back when I used the internet pages instead of Reddit, and stumbled upon a New York Times article that was like, Neil Gaiman is killing Batman, or says goodbye to Batman. And it was for the Who Killed the Caped Crusader 2-issue thing that Neil Gaiman was doing. And I was like, what? Like, Batman's dead? What is it? I did a quick Wikipedia. I couldn't figure out what the hell was going on. So I went into the comics place after looking up. There was a comics place here, well-named. And Neil McLaughlin was the only one working at the time, and no one was in the store. And I came in, and I was just like, hey, I heard that Batman was dying, and I want to know about that. And Neil, in the wonderful fountain of enthusiasm that he is, took me around the comic shop, was like, well, you're going to need this, and you're going to need this. And it was accurate. It was all the Batman Grant Morrison run leading up to that point. As a freshman in college, it was a $200 graphic novel bill that I was so unprepared to pay for, but did not feel socially comfortable enough to say no to. So I bought it all. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for the fact that, like, the Grant Morrison Batman run is so important to me because of, like, you know, economic standpoints of, like, investment versus return. If you invest more in something when you don't have much of it, you place a larger importance on it. So I couldn't afford comics at that time, and I bought a lot of them to be able to understand this story. So I became very invested in it. But Grant Morrison and Neil McLaughlin got me in the comics place.
I think that investment versus return is probably a big difference in the way that we look at a 90-page giant mm-hmm. versus the way that a normal human looks at
or many of the issues this week that were all 40-page giants.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
I don't I don't think that I went to the comics place when I first lived in Bellingham with Andy for about 3 months. I don't think I made it up there. I did make it to Cosmic Comics. And then when I moved back into town, I moved into the hardware building right across from the Blue Horse Gallery. Oh, wow. And I started shopping at Comics Place. I think I bought the last issues of Transmetropolitan there. Nice. And maybe the last issues of Hitman also.
Big Hitman fan.
Because I remember those both being like things that I read around that time. I think it was just always Mike working there. And he was grumpy. And yeah. Then I saw TJ on the street one day, and TJ remembered my name from like visiting his store a couple of times 3 years earlier. And I switched to comic or Cosmic for a little while. But yeah, I think my first time would have been around that time. I don't remember it specifically. And I don't think I met Rowan until way after that.
I think Rowan was there my second or third visit. And that was what made me like pick it unabashedly as like that. Okay, this is my shop because that guy works here.
It's the people. Dude.
Yep, absolutely. And Roman is the guy that made me love the shop that I now co-own. So pretty fucking cool.
Me and Neil.
What about you, Roman? Do you remember your first? You were probably 12.
No, I was in college.
He's 36. He was negative 12.
You know, it's funny. I don't remember my first time there as a customer. It would have been in 92. But at some point I went in. I think I went in there because Steve discovered it first. Steve Myers.
32 told me about years it. Ago.
Yeah, and told me about it. So I went in, started shopping there, met Mike, and opened up a file. And I don't remember exactly any specific times. I remember my first day working there because, you know, me and technology, I remember being shocked and stumbling through the ringing up people and discovering that Mike's old cash register. It was barely an adding machine. It didn't tell you the change, which I didn't know they made cash registers that didn't tell you the change.
And Roman needs that.
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh my God, now I gotta use math. Ugh, this sucks.
Roman, I was so nervous about my first couple days working at the shop, getting trained by you. Just like so nervous because I wanted that job so bad. And I just, you know, you overinflate how much you think goes into it, right? You're like, no one gets jobs at comic shops. I got one. Like, I need to be the absolute best employee there has ever been.
God, I remember. Yeah, I remember that feeling and thinking, oh, man, I'm just messing this up. And I thought I'd be able to do this because, you know, I just, before I moved up, I worked at my parents' pet food supply store. I was like, well, I ran a register. I could do all this. And it's like, oh, my God. Mike's going to fire me like after my first day.
And it was like 2 or 3 weeks in where Roman was like, do you never seen Wrath of Khan? We're working this shift while you and I watch Wrath of Khan. So we just sat there and watched Wrath of Khan and paused it, you know, when the 2 or 3 people came in. It was fucking glorious.
Roman, you said 1992. So Jeff and I shared some comics that were key at the moments that we came in. Do you have any that stand out from your first month there? Because I've got a list of 1992 comics that I think will put everybody in that place.
God, I'm trying to remember. I think I was maybe still reading Spawn because that wasn't that like the first or second year of Spawn still? Early Spawn?
Yeah, it might be early Spawn. That's not on this brief list that I have. Oh. Amazing Spider-Man 361. Okay. So the first appearance of Carnage came out in April. Oh. There's Superman Died. September, I believe.
I was thinking maybe Death of Superman.
That was the big, the first big event I worked.
Yeah. Incredible Hulk 400. And then Captain Confederacy Volume 2, Number 4 came out.
Mm.
Ooh, wow.
So classic time in comics.
A big one, yeah.
Yeah.
Like we mentioned, everybody, this is episode 350. So I'm going to let my hair down. Django has clearly already let his hair down. And Roman's beard is 10 times longer than it normally is. We're just going to kind of relax and have some fun. We're going to talk about a couple releases that came out this week. We've also got a couple games. We got another email from Andrew here. Thank you so much. And it's a convenient week for it because it was Free Comic Book Day, which means it was hard to read a bunch of comics, although we did. and I learned something interesting today. But because DC Comics technically come out on a Tuesday and Marvel and everything else comes out on a Wednesday, this week, that meant that DC Comics had a fifth week and nobody else did. So DC had all annuals and Marvel was not doing a fifth week. And as far as I know, it's the first time with this Tuesday, Wednesday release thing that has happened.
Not to get too in the weeds with industry stuff, but fifth weeks at this point in human evolution seems like you guys could just add annuals on the fifth week and make one more issue a year.
Yeah,
and make more money for yourself,
especially with
everybody.
How inconsistent they are with like delaying books and stuff. The idea
or churning
that
them out every 3 weeks. Sometimes.
Yeah. Doesn't make sense. But really interesting, just a little bit of comics know-how to go into with this week.
Also, unless some plans change for other publishers, this is the last time that thing will be out of sync because starting in July 3rd, DC's going back to Wednesday releases. None of this is relevant to our store because we never left Wednesday releases, but it's been a topic of discussion for about 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah. So let's talk about one book before we get into a next fun thing. Yeah. What do you think the biggest release of this week was?
Oh, well, yeah, did Fury. Any Fury was pretty good.
I would say of the books that I read, the one that I loved the most and was most excited about was Get Fury. So let's talk about Garth Ennis and Jason Burroughs' first issue of their new miniseries, Get Fury.
Sure. So I am curious. That was my answer. What was the actual answer?
I think the actual answer in terms of highest profile releases this week was probably Bloodhunt number one.
Ah.
Not Blood Brothers Mother. There's a lot of blood books.
A lot of blood books.
Bloodhunt Brothers Mother.
I think you could make a case possibly for either House of Brainiac Special, Chapter 2.5, Fuck Yourself, DC, or Whisper Queen number one, the follow-up to White Trees. But let's talk about Get Fury because it is my highest score of the week. I love when Garth Ennis teams up with Jason Burroughs, which is convenient because they team up quite often.
Mm-hmm.
This sees Garth Ennis return to a Punisher story in the Vietnam era of American history, which Garth Ennis writing stories that take place in Vietnam is my favorite instance of writers and war stories coming together. And this one sort of hinges on the idea of Nick Fury, who has met the Punisher in the past, has been kidnapped behind enemy lines, and the Punisher has been recruited by the government to go kill him because he's got too much information. They assume he will leak it out. So we get the setup for that in this issue, and he kind of goes and starts his journey. Is that an accurate? Yeah.
Though, you know, just in case anybody's listening, it's Frank Castle, and he's already in the army, so they just move him over to take out Fury. And at first I was confused because I'm like, Nick Fury was in Vietnam, but this is when he was with the CIA before SHIELD was formed, and he's kind of on a mission pretending to be a soldier, but I don't think he actually is a soldier. He's CIA.
And like Ennis had done, I think it was Ennis, unless it was Jason Aaron, but he did that Fury Max series.
That was Garth Ennis.
Okay. Yeah. So, you know, he's all kind of combining those things. I just want to quickly, you guys should turn to page 5. It's the page that on the left side, Punisher is reading a letter that's written in cursive. And on the right side, you see some people and a dog.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That middle panel of those two guys standing there, I think it's been really interesting. I've been trying to kind of, there's been changes in Jason Burroughs' art over the last 3 years or so, which mm-hmm. used to be a pretty consistent style. And that page, it's almost got some like Chris Somney-esque ink lines, like thick ink lines, the way it's like firepower, the way the faces are shaded. It's interesting, and that's not representative of every single page in here, but I normally associate Jason Burroughs with sort of like a very thin line and a lot of lines, almost more in the McNiven, like Steve McNiven camp of things. And he's been going more towards this like workman cartoonist style that I think is really interesting.
So I talked to him, I don't know, maybe 6 years ago at an Emerald City Comic Con, because I was really enjoying his stuff on Moon Knight. And I was just like, man, this is my favorite version of your art that I've seen. And it's, you know, like, because his stuff kind of has that Luna Brothers sort of paper doll look to it sometimes.
Yeah.
And he was starting to loosen up a little bit and getting a little more dynamic with it. And he was just like, yeah, man, I don't know how people put out a comic every month. So I wonder, because I noticed that his art was simplifying quite a bit in this issue also. Yeah. I wonder if he's just coming up with ways to, you know, do this stuff a lot faster, because it's not every panel. A lot of the panels look like his classic kind of hyper-posed stuff. Yeah. But every once in a while, you'll be like, okay, he's like that panel you talked about, or a handful of other ones in here that are just like, oh yeah, this is just a cartoon version of what he does. And I like them both.
I like them both too. And I think that like you use the term shortcuts, and I think that's an absolutely accurate term to use. And on one hand, it feels like it means it's less than or something, but I really think that it's not in this case. And I don't think that's what you were saying at all. But I
Kirby
think you look
is
at
Kirby because of his shortcuts.
Yeah. And right? like same with Darwin Cook and Chris Somney. And the reason Somney and Cook could put things out at the rate that they did is because they had found shortcuts that. And that's what I think of as real cartooning, like really mastering the balance of being able to convey as much information as you can with, you know, the least time spent on detail, unless detail is your thing, like Jeff Darrow or Stokoe or something. But
and in this, when that guy gets the side of his face cut off with a machete, there's plenty of detail.
That was old Jason Burroughs right there.
Yeah. And I love how grotesque this is. Like,
yeah.
I think that's an important part of a Vietnam story is just not looking away from all the horrible, horrible violence that was happening.
And it's interesting. This Get Fury is Max Comics, number one in the top left corner, and has explicit content written below it.
Mm-hmm.
Also this week from Marvel, we got Blood Hunt number one, which had explicit versions that were polybagged with different art and normal versions that were not polybagged.
Right.
And it just seems like a kind of weird, inconsistent dynamic they're doing here. Like,
well, and we also got Deadpool Wolverine WW3, which I don't know if you guys read that, but it is ultra, ultra, ultra violent.
Yeah.
So like Marvel is surprisingly leaning into lots of blood and guts in their normal superhero stuff.
Which I think is absolutely fine with me. But the idea of polybagging Blood Hunt and not this is like inconsistent outside of the fact that Blood Hunt is probably more superheroes in it. So they assume more kids are going to be interested in it and therefore need to separate those two. But
there's writer decisions and there's marketing decisions. And that Blood Hunt thing is 100% a marketing decision. Yeah, and I love it.
Me too.
I like the gimmick.
Yeah, I like the fact. And like they called it the Red Band trailer or the Red Band variant or whatever. That was pretty clever. I mean, I didn't care about it personally, but it was a clever marketing gimmick.
Yep. And it made me very excited to read that issue to the point where it was the first issue I read this week because I needed to check out how gory this thing was. But Roman, what did you think of Get Fury number one?
Oh, I loved it. It was my highest scored book of the week, too. And as usual, Garth, like you said, Garth Ennis and Vietnam, Frank Castle, they're like three or four just excellent dialogue scenes in this. And one of them you mentioned there with the MPs coming and wants to take that guy's dog away. And the one MP going off on Castle about him and the recon guys getting everybody else in trouble. And then that Jeep shows up to take him off on the mission. And the guys eat crow. But then later when it's Fury and the other two captives, that's an excellent dialogue with that gets into the gore. And in between is when Castle's talking to the, I don't know what he is. Is he a general or above a general?
Some military guy.
He's getting his orders, what he has to do to. And that's an excellent conversation. And it's all just so insightful into the way the military operates and all this behind the scenes crap and the stuff
I agree.
Never hears about.
As a open-minded liberal in a growing up in a very conservative town, I always kind of have disdain for the military in general, but I love Garth Ennis military comics specifically, or like Tom King, Sheriff of Babylon, like those books that are able to give you insight into why that structure exists the way that it does and when it works well and when it doesn't. Like I love that. Garth Ennis, you know, is my favorite war comic writer, and Vietnam, just because of the nature of it, fascinates me. There's so much moral ambiguity in all of it. So I think Ennis taps into that so well. So I cannot wait for the, you know, rest of the series and each subsequent issue.
Yeah, have you read all the other ones, Jeff? Like, so
I have
like
not.
Punisher Born, Fury, War Gone By.
I have not read all of them. I haven't read just like the whole Punisher Max run by Ennis, but I've read all of the minis. So like Born, which I actually think was a chunk of issues in there, or like Platoon, or, you know, Fury Max. And
I think you might really enjoy the 12 issue, like the first Garth Ennis Punisher Max story.
Yeah.
It was a 12 issue story. The movie got loosely based on it, but it's like, it's him and Steve Dillon. So it's like a dream.
Well,
team.
Guess what? They're reprinting the omnibus and I have a request in for it.
Nice.
So I think it kind of goes without saying, but this was my 10 of the week. It was my top note. It was my 350 fish.
Wow, 10.0. I'm gonna give it an 8.5. I really liked it. Nothing pushed it above an 8.5 for me, though.
Nice. Not even the head that was cut with a machete at like the 4/5 line. So oh, it's like cut,
it's so good. It's so good. That might have been offset by the guy getting buried alive, though. Like that was horrible. The dude getting his head cut off is like cartoon violence, and the dude getting buried alive was really disturbing to me. Now we're waiting for Roman's score. We can just look at him and count to 350. Does that sound right?
There you go. There you go. God, I love Fury trying to talk the other guy, tell him to shut up. And quit antagonizing him, because Fury just, you know, he knows what's coming.
Fury was nervous for him.
Yeah, I give it a 10.
Nice. Double gooey. Roman, actually, if you could move your gooey duck over a little bit, it is fluiding at me.
Boom, boom.
It's dropping. Okay. Okay, sweet. That was great, everybody. Good. That was good. I want to play a game with Django. This is coming back. This is a Django-centered game. There's a lot of Django focus this week, which is important to me because I worry about his ego. Django, I brought this up a little while ago.
Is it because you can see that the baldness is really getting to me?
Your hair's down. I can't tell it right now.
Build me back up.
I have 13 Batman stories here, either short stories or runs. Like an example, Grant Morrison's run is in here. Like that. I've got 13. Your job is to give each one of them a score on a 1 to 20 scale, and you can use decimal 0.5 is as low as you can go.
Okay.
And you can't use the same number score more than once.
Jesus. Okay.
And this is a quick, this is only 13. So there's many Batman things out there. This is not comprehensive. And this is, and no one is beholden of anything. I'm going to record your score as I read through this list.
And you're going down the list, so I don't know what's coming.
Exactly.
Are you going way out of field with any of these, or is this the 13 I would guess?
Because
I got another game we could play. I could just guess which 13 you picked.
It's a little all over the place. It's a little all over the place.
All right.
First, 1 to 20.5s are okay. Scott Snyder's Batman run.
1 to 20, so I'm going to say 15.
15 even. Batman Hush.
Hush, I'm going to say 12.
And there's no shame if you haven't read some of these. I made some assumptions. So this one, Gotham by Gaslight.
Gotham by Gaslight, I'm going to say 17.
Okay, it's a high one. Legends of the Dark Knight issues 1 through 50.
Oh, that's not fair.
Okay, I didn't know where the logical ending was.
Some real good stuff. I would say 1 through 15 is something that you could
reasonably
score, because that gives you the original story,
Venom,
and the Grant Morrison story.
Oh yeah, Gothic.
Gothic. You could go one more and get Prey in there. So that's
whatever. You know, the first really good 2 years of that.
If I was gonna be giving that a real honest score, I'd probably give it a 10 in this game.
Batman Nightfall.
Nightfall, I'm going to give that a 13.
Okay. Year One.
That's got to get a 19 from me.
Okay. Batman The Long Halloween.
Long Halloween, I'm going to put at a 14.
Court of the Owls.
Didn't you say
Scott Snyder? Oh, wait, sorry. I said Scott Snyder. Sorry. Black Mirror.
Black Mirror, Jesus. I'm going to give that a 16.
Killing Joke.
Killing Joke, I'm going to give 18.
Morrison's Batman run.
Yeah, that's a dirty trick. I'm going to give that a... Fuck, how can I slot that in between... I'm going to give that a 13.5.
Mm-hmm. Batman Universe.
Oh, that's a good one.
Thank you.
You little bitch. Batman Universe, I'm gonna say 15.5.
All right. And then the last one I've got on here, Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns is going to get an 18.5.
Okay. All right. So I've got it for you.
Okay.
Lowest of that list for Django, coming in at 10.0, was Legends of the Dark Knight. The next one is Batman Hush at 12.0. He gave a 13 to Batman Nightfall. He gave a 13.5 to Grant Morrison's Batman run. A 14 to The Long Halloween. He gave a 15 to Scott Snyder's run.
And to be fair, that's mostly carried by the first half.
Yeah, I agree. Batman Universe, a 15.5. The Bendis and Darrow.
Darrington, tight and fun.
Yep. 16 he gave to Black Mirror. The next up was The Killing Joke.
No, Gotham by Gaslight at 17.
Oh, babe. Sorry. I'm sorry. You're right. Thank you. Gotham by Gaslight at 17. Then The Killing Joke at 18. Then DKR, Dark Knight Returns at 18.5. And Year One at 19. So your top three in order are Year One, Dark Knight Returns, and The Killing Joke.
Surprise, everyone.
I like having it codified. That was pretty good.
It's a beginning, middle, and end. And to be clear, those numbers were just for me to rank, right? Like, I wouldn't say that Legends of the Dark Knight is only half of a scale.
Right. No, right? It was just a pocket.
I was just leaving myself some squish room.
But you guys, that's really interesting. Year One, Dark Knight Returns, Killing Joke, Gotham by Gaslight is your fourth highest Batman series.
I've got a real soft spot for that. That came out at the right moment for me.
Yeah. Black Mirror was your fifth. No, sorry. Yeah, that was your fifth. Yeah.
I mean, I could probably switch Black Mirror and Batman Universe, but they're both real solid.
Then Scott Snyder's. Legends of the Dark Knight is a lot lower than I thought it would be.
Well, they're not great, Jeff.
I read was fucking phenomenal.
They're good. They're good comics, but they exist in a very specific snapshot in time.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you ask me what I thought of the death of Robin, right? Like, that would be artificially high because it's important, but it's not a great comic.
What was the Legends of the Dark Knight story? I think it was in the first year or two of that run that was focused on Hugo Strange.
That was Prey.
Yeah,
Jeff, that was Prey.
Did you read that one, Jeff?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah,
Prey is so good.
It's so good.
Doug Moench and Paul Gulacy.
Prey, The Cult, Venom, and the Morrison one, Gothic.
Gothic.
Are things I've read in the last year or year and a half and blew my mind. And
The Cult
I
is different.
Loved. Is that not in that run?
Masks is the first one.
Okay, Shaman. Also?
Shaman is what it is. Yeah, okay, with the masks on the cover. The Cult was Bernie Wrightson and Danny O'Neill 4-issue prestige format miniseries.
Okay.
Yeah. Was it an Elseworlds?
Not officially. Gotham by Gaslight was the first Elseworlds comic, I think.
Okay, yeah.
And I've never read Gotham by Gaslight, so I should. But
it's awesome. It's just Bruce Wayne framed for being the Jack the Ripper. And he's trying to solve the crime from his jail cell. And I remember trying to solve it also from the notes that he has on the wall of his jail cell.
And there's obviously many that I left out there. So apologies to anybody whose favorite Batman run didn't get mentioned there. But
that's a good list.
Yeah. You know, I did three different Google searches and pieced it together. So
here's a game I think we should play when we do our next live podcast.
Yeah.
At some venue. I think we should each choose 10 stories from a character. And someone else has to guess which 10 it is. So I choose 10 Spider-Man stories, and you have to figure out what those are.
I love it. Turn 10 into 5.
Yeah, even better.
Yeah. I love that idea. Okay, you guys, I want to talk about a different book that came out this week. Did everybody read Whisper Queen? Roman, did you?
I did. And
Django didn't read Whisper Queen.
I read The White Trees, too, because I couldn't remember that series at all.
I didn't read The Whisper Queen.
But you read White Trees?
Yeah, I did. Not this week. Read it back in the day. That's the Dick one, right?
Yeah. And they reprinted that 2-issue miniseries this week as well. And there were far fewer dicks in it than I remembered. I feel like there was a full page glory shot of somebody with a real nice dick in it.
I guess for me, I didn't read it just because, like, the setting isn't something that grabs me.
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, like, I think that the gayness in it is a draw for a lot of people, and that's not like added bonus for me. It's just settings and characters that aren't extra draw for me.
Okay, well, Roman, you read it?
Yeah.
Did you like just it?
Boost the volume on that part, Andrew. I want everybody in the back to hear that I'm a bigot.
Damn woke fantasy comics. I did like it. I mean, I when I saw the cover, I had to read the White Trees reprint because I had no memory of that 2-issue series at all.
Yeah, I mean, it was like 6 years ago.
Yeah, I couldn't remember if I read it. And then once I was rereading it, I realized, okay, I have read this.
Yeah.
But had forgotten it.
Yeah.
And I liked that. And I liked, what's it called? The Witch Queen? The what?
Yeah, The Whisper Queen.
The Whisper Queen. Yeah, and I like that too, fine. I was a little like, okay, well, I mean, these are kind of interesting characters. I like the dynamics between them. I like the Wookiee-like guy. I don't know what he is, but, they're going to rescue their kids.
Yeah, I don't know. There's just something about that world I like. It's just like I don't even love fantasy comics, and this is a pretty straight up font fantasy comic. But it does really interesting juxtaposition stuff. Like it just mixes up gender and heteronormative narratives in here, and it makes it more interesting to me than it was. And a lot of the characters are like androgynous, like the main character in this. I didn't know it was a boy or a girl, and not that it matters until like a midpoint when somebody did drop a pronoun. But then I was like, oh, I assume that was a guy. I like all of that kind of just tipping fantasy 15 degrees, because fantasy is something that seems like there are a lot of tropes within it that things fall within, and that's maybe one of the things that kind of causes me to be a little bit less interested in it. But I thought, yeah, and like I love the art as well. Like Anka, their art, Chris Anka, I absolutely love, and Zdarsky's writing is great, and you got Matt Wilson on colors. Like it's a fantastic crew. I like any book that's got like a nearly full page orgy scene of like all sorts of different debauchery going on. Like, fuck yeah, that's all of it.
You say all swords of different debauchery?
You could say that too. Yeah.
I don't think there's any sword, well, literal swords involved in it.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I knock them up, you set them down, bud.
But yeah, I don't know. It's a very comfortable space to me. It doesn't, even though it's been like 6 years since reading the last one, I jumped in and I didn't really remember much, but like, oh, I was like, okay, this takes place kind of right after the events that took place in the first issue of the other one, like where our trio of people were framed for doing something. And I was like, I don't remember what they were framed for or what, or maybe they, I don't know, but like it exists around it in a way that didn't make me feel like I was missing stuff by having not read that other stuff since it came out. And it's just it's soft and warm, and I don't know. It's a nice little place to be. I'm surprised by how much I like it, actually.
Yeah, it I'm trying to remember now in the first issue of the new series, because things reach a pretty solid ending with the original two issues, and it's really interesting continuing that now, especially because one of the main people isn't involved anymore.
Yeah, and this like is diverging. It seems like plots of that first one caused some events that then caused this story to take off, and it's mostly separate from the original characters. But yeah, I just want to mention it because I dug it quite a bit, and I was torn between giving it an 8.5 and a 9. But I'm gonna wait to see what Roman says, and that's gonna inform mine. But I have a feeling I'm gonna go 8.5.
I think, oh man, I feel like a 7.8 for the
Nice.
Whisper Queen.
Luckily, our system supports 7.8.
I thought it might. Just because even though I only read it a few days ago, I'm having trouble remembering events in that issue. I remember more from the
White
reprint
Trees one.
than the White
Yeah,
Trees.
and which makes sense because you have the full story arc of that one, whereas this one is like, I don't know what's important, not important yet, but yeah, I like it. I really like it. Yeah, I'm gonna go 8.5 on it. Jenga, do you have a game for us?
I do. Are you ready for a game?
I'm ready for a game.
Yeah.
350 games.
Episode 350, you guys. The game that I've invented is I've found comics that are issue 350, and I'm going to give you text from the cover, and I need you to tell me which series it's from. All
Django, this
right.
is one of your better out-of-the-pocket games. Nice.
We're going to start with an easy one for you.
Okay.
Okay, don't.
Spider-Man.
No,
Oh. The
you're
Hulk.
wrong.
Damn.
Gambit's greatest secret revealed, and some sins can never be forgiven.
It's probably Uncanny X-Men, right?
Do you agree, Roman?
Wait.
Are you Googling it, Roman?
My hands are empty.
Do you happen to remember, is that Gambit first appearance cover in the 200s,
That's
like
what
260s, or is that in 360s?
I'm picturing is that Gambit's first appearance next to that tree or whatever he's next
That's
to. Yeah.
266 in his
I was
big
gonna
trench coat.
guess I was gonna guess 264. Okay, I'm gonna say that's Uncanny X-Men.
You're correct, Jeffrey.
Nice.
You're correct. Okay, here's another one that is I'm gonna give you the clue, and then if you want a hint, I'll give you the hint. And I
Okay.
think you're gonna want the hint. Supersized 350th issue. Okay, fine, I'll give you the hint. Featuring the Captain versus Captain America and the dramatic return of the Red Skull.
Oh, I know that one.
So it's either Captain America or the Avengers. Roman, is it Captain America?
I bet it's Captain America. You're
Okay,
correct.
Captain.
It's Captain
Okay.
America.
Okay, here's another one. It's from a giant size 350th issue spectacular, and the quote from the cover is "Ain't nothing like the real thing."
Fantastic Four.
You're right. Yeah. You're right. You're good at this game, Jeff.
Well, Roman. Right.
Well, you've said the most of them pretty loud. Okay. I guess Roman got number two. Okay, Roman.
Roman's the kind of guy who won't say the answer, and he'll step aside really and let nice the loud, excitable person yell.
I was just thinking about the song. Ain't nothing like the real thing, baby.
Okay, Roman, if you need artist credits on this one, that's a fair hint to ask for. The quote is "Nightmare in Crimson." It's a 350th issue of a comic book.
Nightmare in Crimson. Why? I'm going to say Daredevil or Avengers. Nightmare in Crimson.
My guess is Doctor Strange.
Okay. Do you want an artist?
Sure.
Colin and McLaughlin. Got you guys.
Iron Man.
Out, don't I?
Is that a Batman comic?
It's Batman number 350.
Oh, wow. Who is in Crimson?
It's like a vampire dude with a bald head.
Sweet. That's what you want for your 350.
Wow.
here's one.
We've got two of them on this podcast.
Record-breaking 350th issue, exclamation mark.
Record-breaking.
Come on.
Okay. So, like, I could see Spawn. I don't know if Cerebus. Is it Spawn?
It's
okay.
Spawn.
Yeah.
It was record-breaking because Cerebus hit 350.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
All right. Here's one. Sometimes the past can kill, ...
Sometimes the past can kill. Did Time After Time go that time? Time Before Time? If the past could kill.
Sometimes the past can kill.
Sometimes the past can kill. Roman, 350 in, who would be dealing with time travel victims? Avengers? I just keep saying that because I keep thinking Kang. But yeah, no, Kang was earlier than that. If the past...
I'll give you a clue. The Avengers quotes all said Avengers in them, so I cast it out.
Okay. Oh, okay. Sometimes the past can kill. That was the thing.
That was the thing.
Oh, right.
Sometimes the past can kill.
I need another hit.
It's from Marvel Edge.
Marvel Edge. Yikes.
Sometimes the past.
Forgot about Marvel Edge.
I don't know anything about Marvel Edge.
It's Daredevil, and it's got Daredevil jumping towards the camera and Stick and the Foot Clan.
Okay.
Behind them.
Okay.
We got two more, boys.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus a gallery of all-star pinups.
Wow. Plus a gallery of all-star pinups. So what made it to 350 issues that has had a lot of great artists on it?
Like, that should give you kind of a clue for the era that number 350 came out, probably.
Pinups. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm thinking, and so it was in the 60s, Marvel.
70s. What about like that Journey into Mystery or Thor or something? Is that in there, Roman? No?
I kind of think, it's one of those big, it'll be a bigger than usual size issue. Marvel.
Pinups.
There's a lot of red herrings here. Another blurb on the cover says giant size 350th issue. Also, it's $1.50. So that should get rid of some of those.
Oh.
Iron Man.
Amazing Spider-Man.
Damn it.
You would know that
Spider-Man
cover. It's Dr. Doom and Spidey.
Oh.
And the last one, Great Caesar's Ghost. This caveman skeleton is wearing an indestructible costume exactly like yours.
That's gotta be Action Comics.
That is Action Comics.
Oh, how did you know that? Great Caesar's Ghost? Is that something Superman
Harry
would say?
White, just crazy ass plot stories.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's featuring the secret of the Stone Age Superman. Incredible. How could a Superman have lived and died a million years ago?
Oh my God. Django, great game. I don't think we did great, but that was fun.
Oh, you guys got more than half of them. I wasn't keeping score because, I don't like to rank things.
Yeah, I love that about you. Except for Batman comics, you do that.
I love that.
You guys read Blood Hunt?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
What did you guys think of Blood Hunt?
I thought it was pretty good, although the twist was not very surprising.
Which version did you read? Blood Hunt, like we mentioned earlier, came out as a regular issue with a cover of all the Avengers and Blade in the Shadows. And then the red band version that was polybagged had all of the Avengers with the same image, but Blade was in the shadows making an evil face with blood dripping off of him. Which one did you guys read?
Didn't that one also have like an extra page or something?
The adult one?
Yeah.
I don't know. Is the final page of yours, spoilers, Doctor Strange getting ripped in half?
Well, not in half, but he's been impaled by Blade.
Okay, he gets cut the fuck in half in this one. and there's guts and intestines gross. Going everywhere.
I don't want to see that.
I'm not sure if there's an entire extra page, although I'd totally believe it because there is just some pages of destruction.
I don't know. I mean, Sean or somebody on Tuesday was showing me.
What do you guys think about that idea? I guess we kind of talked about it, but just like this this marketing move.
I think it's a fun idea. I think it's a little surprising coming from a company whose parent company is Disney.
Yeah, I agree.
Like leaning into the blood and guts instead of just kind of having them seems weird. But, this clearly worked. And I think we should buckle up for more of these with diminishing returns going forward.
I really hope they do an erotic one. And I think it's less likely than the violence one, but I hope that there is one that they're just doing is allowed to be more erotic.
Yeah.
Or like, let me see Bruce Wayne's dong again. Or
just once,
Sue
just
Storm's
just for like
clothing
2 minutes.
Invisible. Yeah, one I don't want to be
30
yeah.
seconds. 30 seconds of Bruce Wayne's dong is enough.
I'm not trying to say
15 seconds. Just a little quick peek.
Female. I'm saying male as well. And I agree, Django. The time that they show it to us is very important in the comic.
Yeah.
How long are they showing it to us? Okay. Yeah, I think it's an awesome idea. And I think actually everything you just said, Django, I think it's a fun idea. Buckle up. I think we're going to see more of it. And I think each one will have diminishing returns, except for I bet the third or fourth one will actually be a mainstream story enough that it will become more exciting again. Because this is Jed McKay and Pepe Larraz, an artist I like a lot. Jed McKay, a writer I like more as a writer than I particularly like his comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like I like the vibe of them. I like what they're kind of off the beaten path and they do interesting things, but I don't read all of each one of them. And then this is a vampire comic for the most part, which apparently he has been using in the background of his runs for things like the Moon Knight book and stuff. But this is, you know, Avengers versus vampires. And spoilers again, everybody, Blade is the main guy in charge of being the bad guy.
Yeah, and I guess I don't know or care enough about Blade to have that matter to me.
And I'm not sure if it's in Moon Knight or if it was Avengers or that Blade series, but apparently like he took on a bunch of like Dracula energy power to beat a big bad or something. And now maybe he's morally compromised. Roman, I'm not sure what that was in. Did you read it?
I didn't either, but I'm assuming it was in the Blade series where he was like the sheriff of whatever vampire town and
whatever
Russia
Dracula was doing.
Vampires had been stuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
I assume it happened there.
And so in this issue, it's mostly like the Avengers and the world as we know it kind of falling apart a little bit because everything is cast into darkness and now vampires are destroying everybody. But there is somebody, Blade, in charge of a big, bad vampire organization. He's got essentially the name.
Statue guy and barbed wire guy.
You remember when like Thanos showed up in the Hickman stuff and he had that like the enclave of bad guys like Ebony Maw and those folks? It was like basically, or like Matt Fraction's Fear Itself when it was like, here's a new team of villains perfectly made to dismantle the Avengers.
Yeah.
I
do not like the character design on most of these characters. Well, on two of them at least.
Yeah, I like a couple of them quite a bit.
Dude with sharp hands looks dumb to me.
I really liked the statuesque person that's like super fluid and looks like a demon and a statue at the same time. And the barbed wire person. I don't know. I'm into those villains much more than I'm into vampires, which I've mentioned I don't particularly care for in my Marvel universe.
Yeah.
It's really interesting on the page that shows the reveal of that full team of bad guys. On the opposing page, there is a shot on the right side of like an Avenger in pain, and inked around it is just the like a giant thumbprint.
Oh, weird.
See that? That's a weird artistic choice there.
It's kind of cool, though.
It is, and I'm not sure, you know, what exactly the intent of it is, but it's an interesting choice. I mean, like, Sean Gordon Murphy puts thumbprints in everything, and I love it.
That is cool, because I didn't even notice it was a thumbprint but until you said it, but yeah, that's definitely a thumbprint. I thought it was just supposed to be, like, waves of energy around the Scarlet Witch, but it's a thumbprint wave of energy.
Yeah. Yeah. I bet one of the extra pages is just there's two pages of giant vertical columns of like this town at this time and a bunch of people getting murdered or destroyed. And there's one that's pretty graphic and I could see that just being skipped entirely.
I really like the bad guy with all the arms.
Yeah.
Above that thumbprint. So, Jeff, I've mentioned this to you more than once, I think, but the existence of this comic and this story means that now we have fractured universes, right? So in one version of this comic, a security guard can be knocked out in the corner. And in another version, they've been torn in half and their guts are leaking out. And so I'm just waiting for the Bloody Universe version of that guy to need revenge.
Continuity hounds will be bothered by that. You know, this is a great example of the way that the multiverse exists, because there's a billion possibilities and multiverse, you know, universes created at any given moment with things going a fraction differently. Right.
Yeah. So
this is a great way of examining the multiverse possibility. Cause yeah, you're totally right. Like one guy got cut in at the end of this issue, Doctor Strange got cut in half in my book, but in Romans, he got impaled.
Yeah.
That means there's two halves of Doctor Strange in one universe and just a guy with a hole in another.
So that's like the difference between a healing spell and a lizard healing spell. Like, yes. Is he going to grow two Doctor Stranges in the Bloody Universe? Is there a number two that's bloody, or are they only doing a bloody number one?
I didn't think about that. I'm going to research that really quickly, because they better do an entire series of the adult violent versions, or else series codes and subscriptions as a comic store are going to be totally fucked up.
Oh yeah. Everything's going to be wrong. And honestly, if they do a bloody version of every issue, everything's likely to be wrong anyway.
Yeah. It's
true. How did they, okay. Yeah. So this bloody one has a totally different barcode series code. So, This is just a tiny, tiny sample of what you can expect from the Data Bros podcast that Jeff and I do with Brian Garside, where we discuss series codes and the fumblings of data industry-wide.
Dude, I don't think that they did. Oh, they did. Thank God. Okay. Yeah. There's an issue number two red band.
Okay. Nice. Yeah. Nice.
Yes.
Yeah. I thought this was a lot of fun as far as like main Marvel universe with vampires, which is like two strikes for me.
Yeah, me too.
That's like, this is, if you just whispered those into my ear, that's less interesting to me than White Trees.
Yeah.
As a theme, but I thought it was really well done and super fun.
Yeah, the marketing of it made me very excited to read it, and I expect diminishing returns, but I'm excited for the next one as well. Roman?
I don't know. It's funny because I love vampire movies, but I don't know. Other than Dracula himself, I don't really care too much about Marvel's vampires. My favorite scene in this issue was when a couple citizens are being chased by vampires, and all of a sudden they're incinerated, and it's because it's in Latveria, and Dr. Doom is like, "Ah, good, the defenses work."
Yeah,
just
although
casual.
I do love seeing Dr. Doom. You know, give me a Dr. Doom anytime you want.
So yeah, that was my favorite part of the issue. The rest, I'm kind of like, eh, whatever.
So what's your score?
God, I think my score is going to be like a six.
Jeepers.
I'm so jaded. I'm just like, yeah, sure. Everybody's killed. They're all going to come back as vampires, and they're going to get healed and be back to normal.
Ugh.
This has no impact on anything.
Oh,
Roman,
no.
Find your childhood.
That's what comics are. Everything returns back to the status quo. That's what they do.
It's comics and friends.
Yeah.
Love that show.
Plus I don't care about Blade, and
I don't know.
Dracula? Come on, let's have Dracula. I want
the
real quote unquote vampire.
Well, that's
Jeff,
a low score.
I give it a 7.5. What do you give it?
I give it an 8.
You give it an 8. All right. Those all seem internally consistent with us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys, I'm gonna play a voicemail from our friend Andrew Carlson,
that's
which
a
means
good idea.
It might be a little bit long, because Andrew likes to record a long voicemail. So let's see what we got.
Interesting.
Hello, comic bookians. Happy free comic book
dulcet
day.
Dulcet tones.
Was a fun time. Was so glad to see a bunch of different faces. But I'm coming in with a question for y'all. Jeff, Buckshot, go.
Oh, that was really good, dude. Really good. I read Space Ghost number 1 by David Post. That's probably why this voicemail is a little bit longer when I looked at the time. I read Space Ghost because I loved the look of Space Ghost. And I loved the whole, you know, talking with Space Ghost late night talk show thing. That was very funny. the art in this is fine and the story is fine. But what is cool is to see like Brack and stuff as an imposing threat, and to see Space Ghost as a serious character. And I can't wait to see Zorak in here as well. So, like, I'm going to keep checking it out. It's fine art, and the writing was fine. But it's a character that I like, and I don't think it's been given this much of, like, an actual effort behind it that I've noticed. So that's cool. Bear Pirate Viking Queen, since we I'll probably read this, but I don't know. We'll get into it today. The art in this is amazing. It's like a mix between the watercolors you see in David Mack art and then the abstract nature of Bill Sienkiewicz. I don't know if this story made a ton of like internally consistent sense, but it's kind of like a pirate who is like inspired or possessed by the spirit of this bear. It's a spirit animal, and they do some bad pirate stuff, but then he dies at the end because there's this crazy Viking that shows up. And I don't know that I would read more of it, but I'm incredibly impressed
by
the art.
That's your time, bud.
All right.
Nice.
That wasn't exactly 90 seconds, I don't think, but that was roughly 90 seconds.
Well done, Andrew.
I did it in my head.
I do actually have a question, though. I promise.
Nice. That was really good, Andrew.
So I've been getting into a video game called Lies of P about Pinocchio. It could be called Pinocchio Souls to some. It's very good. But my question is related to that in the sense that I want to know what comic book using a public domain story has been your favorite. As Pinocchio is a story in the public domain, I'm just curious if you have any particular favorites. I think Dracula would be one, Cinderella, and like some other typical fairy tales, but I'm curious what your favorite take on a story in the public domain is in the world of comic books. Thanks. Have a good one.
Andrew, that was masterfully done. Well done. And that's why it was a 2-minute and 50-second voicemail. my scores for my books are Space Ghost, I gave a 7.5, and Bear Pirate Queen, I gave a 7. Public domain characters, that's a great question. The one that comes to mind that I haven't read is Fables, I think is probably one of the held in higher esteem books that is kind of capitalizing on public domain characters. The one that I really liked was Peter Panzerfaust by Curtis Weeb many years ago. Mm-hmm. It was like a kind of play on Peter Pan. Roman, I'm particularly interested to hear what you've got to say for this because you know more about public domain stuff.
Well, I'm not sure that I do because I'm trying to think of what public domain characters series. I mean, because like Flintstones doesn't count because that's still owned by whoever owns Flintstones, right?
Yeah. Flintstones is owned by DC right now. Okay. I can throw one in while you think. Air Pirates, which was was it Air Pirates? What was the underground Mickey Mouse one that the guy got sued for?
I don't know.
Dan something. Never mind. I can't stall for you, Roman. You're on your own.
Damn it. I'm drawing a blank. I know there must be.
I mean, Fables is kind of the gold standard for that.
Yeah, right? I would say it really so. Is. It's kind of all of them.
Yeah.
Echolands, you could say in there, like the Red Riding Hood character. I'm not sure if that's
those characters are kind of homages or direct riffs on those. Yeah.
And I think artistically that's awesome. I don't know that the story is my favorite.
Yeah. I mean, I could say some of the really great storylines in Tomb of Dracula from Marvel in the 70s.
Guys, I got mine and it's a good one. Alan Moore's Lost Girls.
Oh, that is a good one. Yeah. That is a good one.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say Dan O'Neill's comics and stories, and it is an Air Pirates is the other one. So he was a guy who did like super gross, violent underground Mickey Mouse and Three Little Pig ripoffs.
I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
I really enjoyed some. I think it was Thomas Yates did some Tarzan comics in the 90s, early 2000s. Were pretty good.
I mean, we're coming up on a time where a lot of characters are going to be entering that.
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Yeah, you know, like that.
Is Sherlock Holmes there yet?
Oh, yeah. Sherlock has been there for years because he, like, that's why we've seen every iteration of Sherlock. We even had like two or three Sherlock Holmes movies or TV shows at a time for a little while there.
Yeah. Isn't even Superman coming up pretty soon?
Yeah, probably so. But the way it worked with Mickey Mouse is that only the Steamboat Willie version of Mickey Mouse is going into public domain. And the way that it works with Alice in Wonderland is that it like you can't do any of the Disney stuff for Alice. So like the way the caterpillar is depicted can't be used. And that's why those movies by the director, what's his name? Like they're I think a little bit different than never mind. I cut all that. That's garbage. I don't know what I'm talking about.
The Alice in Wonderland movies with Johnny Depp.
I don't know what I'm talking about. That's garbage.
There was those Alice video games that looked awesome. There was like deep horror ones.
Yeah, I wonder if Superman goes into public domain, because now they, you know, they have to say, you know, credit the Jerry Siegel's family or whatever. I wonder, like, which version of Superman would be public domain.
It's 100 years, right? So we still have
20, a little ways,
24 years.
But it's going to be fucking interesting, and I can't wait to see what happens 15, with
14
it.
Years, yeah.
Great question, Andrew. Guys, I think we got about one more time for one more book. So, Django, I'm going to let you pick. There's a couple books that came out this week that I think you read and have opinions about, and I'm curious which one you want to talk about the most.
Yeah, the one I want to talk about the most is the one you made fun of at the top of the hour. Superman House of Brainiac
that
Special.
That was one of my three,
part 2.5.
Yeah, this, it was one of the three I had.
Spoiler alert, even though the beginning and the end of this are pretty bad, this gets a 10.0 from me.
Wow, really?
I didn't think the first and last part were very bad, except for the green Brainiac font against a black background is a bad move. Everyone,
give us a green background and a white font.
Although I would rather have that Brainiac font than the fucking Hassan Osmani El Hao lettering in the Flash, which in this particular issue was fucking out of control. Like,
I should touch on the Flash briefly too.
You gotta rein that shit in.
Okay, so lettering choices DC wide aside, this is just basically a full Mark Russell politics issue surrounded by Joshua Williamson hanging out with Brainiac, who I don't really care about, and Amanda Waller, who I don't really care about. And those serve the story. There is an interesting bit with somebody who looks an awful lot like Lobo's old school teacher, but it,
I thought the same thing from the issue that I read.
Yeah.
With the Pandemic Star. I was like, is that the same lady?
It looks like his charge from the original Lobo miniseries. And I don't think it's her. I'm going to have to do a little more research. But that's not why I like this book so much. I like this so much because Mark Russell and Steve Pugh, the Dream Team, did a bit on Perry White running for mayor. And like one of the first things you see Perry White say is there is almost no meat in this sandwich. And he's sad and looking at a sandwich with his assistant next to him. And when I read that, I was like, there's no way Josh Williamson wrote that line. That feels like a Mark Russell line. And I flipped to the front. And I was like, oh, shit, it's Mark Russell.
When I ordered this comic, I was like, Joshua Williamson and Mark Russell. Like, what could that be? So I ordered a little bit more than normal. And it is just two short Josh Williamson stories and then clearly a just Mark Russell and Steve Pugh story.
Yeah. And every single page of the Mark Russell one had something that made me laugh out loud in public in a restaurant before I went to see a movie. He's just so funny. And so I think the thing that he's learning as he goes is the Flintstones wasn't super subtle, right? And then for a while, he was being really subtle with his commentary. And now I think that he's got the confidence to know exactly when to be super not subtle and when to be a little bit subtle with his with what he's pointing at. But this is just like the perfect absurdist study on politics. And, you know, there's no world where Perry White would win in real life, but he has a great speech in this. And he has a great conversation with Lois Lane, and he's Bibbo's a main character in this. And I've never really cared about Bibbo, but I really like Bibbo in this. He's running his bar. Did you read this, Jeff?
Yeah.
So Bibbo's running his bar. He opens at noon, and until noon, he's the Perry White campaign headquarters. But at noon, he turns into a bar, and there's just this constant confusion about who somebody called. They're like, is this the Perry White headquarters? He's like, no, it's 2 o'clock. We're a bar. I thought this was hilarious.
It was. This was great. And you know, we said it before, we're big fans of Steve Pugh on here. There's one page where Perry White's in the crowd of the mega analogs here as his opponent is giving a speech. And Perry's got some narration going on, but the panel, or he doesn't have any words. The way Pugh drew, the way Perry's just looking at this mega idiot yelling next to him, that's the one on that page that made me crack up. It's a
great story. Lois's headline, political amateur joins race. Like,
yeah, and the picture.
Like, oh no, I'm not going to play favorites.
Yeah, and it's such a great picture too of Perry.
Yeah. Yeah, man. wonderful stuff. Yeah. What did you think, Jeff? Like, other than the lettering?
Okay. I liked it. I liked the Williamson ones more than I thought I would. The first one, I was like, maybe I'll skim this. And it got me into some Brainiac backstory for this story that I thought was good. And I thought it was well written. And then the last little one, outside of the Amanda Waller, who I'm kind of tired of, although it did mention that, like, she's from Earth 3. So is this a different Earth Amanda Waller?
That was really interesting.
That's
to me.
Really interesting to me. That makes her more interesting than just the idea of it being Amanda Waller. But yeah, I like the Brainiac stuff that's going on. I'm very interested in the Brainiac stuff, and him just maybe making a female Brainiac or whatever isn't the most interesting, but right now it feels pretty interesting. I loved the Mark Russell story. All of my qualms with this issue are the way that it's being put out as House of Brainiac 2.5, which I think is really dirty. Like, that means they were like, oh, let's make an extra issue, even though we put all these checklists out, and let's put this in here as a Superman issue. No, it's Superman. It's a special. And
that, is it not in the checklist?
I don't know if it is. I assumed it wasn't, but might be now.
Shit bags.
But, and as much as I love the Mark Russell story in it, it doesn't feel germane to the House of Brainiac story. Like, it's the byproduct of the fact that, like, they're mad that all this stuff happened in Metropolis, and then they were the victim of superpowered people, kind of like Civil War or something. But it feels very dirty to me for this to be in that.
I guess it's all, like, it's so, yes, I agree. But also, it's moving a main subplot forward from the main series, right? Like, Lois being the editor-in-chief and Perry running for mayor is something that's been kind of a slow boil in the background of the main series.
Right. It has,
that doesn't mean
sure.
it should have a House of Brainiac branding right. on it at all.
And that's what I feel is like to kind of shoehorn it in as 2.5 feels like a real dirty editorial move. But that is separate from the quality of the comic, which I think is very high. So, you know, I take it with a grain of salt because I'm the person that orders the comics and maybe felt a tiny bit betrayed there. I give the issue an 8. I did really, I liked all the stories in it. But I think I would have interacted with the Mark Russell story very differently if it had been put out in a different way. Like, I think I would have.
Do you think it would have? So outside of our store, which I think we would have been able to probably sell more.
Yeah.
If it wasn't part of a crossover, do you think that it would have been a good move on their part to put out a one shot, like a politics one shot for Perry White?
I think it'd be the way that they do it, like the Perry White election special, and then have this be one of three stories in there about whatever they're trying to do with this larger story. Or like,
because it's a full issue long, probably.
It is. And or they could have done a like the Metropolis election issue and have a whole done, you know, thing where it's like Lex running against, you know, Perry or something. Like, they could have done a lot of different things for that to really make sense to come out in the way that it's coming out. And right here, it feels a little bit like a betrayal to the people who are trying to read House of Brainiac. And if
and to
I
Mark
were,
Russell.
Yeah, exactly. Cause he deserves more than that. But if I were just a customer coming into a shop who was like, I want House of Brainiac. And then they showed up in my file, I'd be a little bit like, okay, you got an extra $5 out of me.
Yeah. Good job, Dix. I think one of my favorite parts was just the Joe Rogan, they're putting alien DNA in the chocolate milk.
Absolutely Joe Rogan. Yeah.
And then the panel right next to it is Lexima, which is like a big prominent X. So it's like Twitter. And it says, wake up, not woke is the name. Mm-hmm. Like, they chose their name and then realized they had to clarify it. And then Lex Luthor says, interesting, or Free Lex Luthor says, interesting, like a elongated muskrat kind of thing.
Just
very pointed and
hilarious.
Poignant, because they did some nice character work with Bibbo here. That Russell's calling on some characterization for Bibbo back in, I don't know, when he first appeared in the early 90s or something in Superman. Mm-hmm. When Bibbo's reminiscing about being a kid and he would come in here, a preteen.
I loved
that. And they would have milk, and he was for him because he was a kid. And then later on, when he owned the bar, the only other person that ever drank milk there was Superman. And Bibbo's like, oh, tell you never know who you have something in common with. It's like, oh man, that's really sweet.
Actually made me tear up also in public. Like,
that's
Mark.
That Mark Russell stuff that is perfect and amazing, and I think deserves to be shown not as a 2.5 chapter, you know, because it's incredible. Yeah. He is an amazing writer, and the way that he balances all that stuff, and I know everybody tuned into this episode because they were hoping to get an update on the Kendrick Lamar Drake beef. And I don't have a big one right now because it's 350, but I just, Mark Russell, I put in a very similar category to like Kendrick Lamar. He just says profound things in a way that is insightful, that I trust, that feels genuine.
His first name is Kendrick Lamar Russell.
Oh my God. We have some fun. I have a fun mishap stress story about Free Comic Book Day I'm really excited to share with everybody. I think we'll probably save that for a Data Bros episode.
Yeah, that's a good call. So, we should get Roman's score on this.
Yeah, but I do want your folks on that.
No, man. Well, the Mark Russell, of course, center story is a 10, but the overall issue, I guess I'd have to say, is an 8.
Yeah,
that
and
means
I...
you gave the rest of it a 6.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I like Brainiac, but the rest of it I don't care about.
I'm going to move mine up to an 8.5. Like, I don't want... The Mark Russell thing is great, and I do need to work on separating the publication frustrations with the quality of the book there. And I do want to say, I think this is the most Bibbo I've ever read. And he characterized him great and made him be a lovable, insightful character that is kind of comic. Like, just really great character work, Mark Russell. That's a character that's been popping up a little bit more lately that I'm like, I don't know this person. And... Yeah. So I dug that. Real, just Mark Russell, man, national treasure. Okay, so then Django, let's get quickly into the Flash annual before we get out of here, because I think this one is interesting to talk on. This series has ups and downs for me. There are issues that I've given a 10 to, and then there's ones that frustrate me. This one, I think, for being an annual, it's the Flash 2024 annual, for being a book that I assume by necessity had to have multiple artists in it. Mm-hmm. I think that they did.
Probably because they forgot that they had annuals until a week before it was due.
Yeah. I think that they did a really good job kind of juggling several artists together within this narrative.
Yeah.
And the artists who kind of did the middle chunk, a big portion of it, like two of them, I liked as much for this as Mike Diodato, who's been doing the main series for the most part. And the one thing I had kind of leaving this issue that I thought to me is just that, like, this is like Grant Morrison level difficulty for artists to draw. Like, within the script of this and what the story is like, yeah, then these characters appear in an ethereal realm with several consciousness that have, you know, form, but they're surrounded by manifestations of the way the fifth dimension would portray time and space to a third dimensional. Like, that is such a crazy feat to be asking somebody to do, and I love it. Like, shooting for the stars, and I think that they're doing a really good job of trying to tell a story that is very high concept and, it, you know, almost exceeds the bounds of what comics can do a little bit. Like, it doesn't exceed it, but it's like, it's pushing the bounds of what comics, I think, can kind of present.
Yeah, and what I've liked about this series up until now, up until this issue, is that the writing was shooting for something Grant Morrison-y.
Yeah.
And it wasn't bothering me. Because, like, I don't have a problem with the concepts that Grant Morrison has. I just don't glom onto them, and I have a really hard time keeping them in my head long enough to understand what's going on. And this Flash has done a really good job, for whatever reason, of keeping me in tune with what's going on with the series. And this one, no.
Yeah. No.
It was, in my opinion, a bad comic.
And I wouldn't go that far, because it was an annual, and I thought it did kind of a cool thing of, like, giving us these two characters. God, I forget even which ones. The, like, purple Flash, and then the yellow, newer kid Flash.
Yeah.
And they're kind of our identifying person as they're moving through all these different frequencies of the Speed Force and the multiverse. Mm-hmm. I thought that whole little tour was kind of cool. What occurred to me is that a big thrust of what's going on this issue and kind of the previous one is that, like, Wally has kind of, like, found this ethereal space and has been spending too much time there and neglecting his family. And that has been elements of it, but I don't feel like the story has actually conveyed the gravity of that very well. Like,
not until this issue.
Yeah, or maybe, and it kind of gave some hints at the last issue, but it's like, maybe, and so what I was thinking while reading this is maybe if you read it condensed all together, like in a single sitting or a paperback, that would work better.
Yeah.
But like, as it stands, it's felt like whatever this space that Wally's going to is, isn't, I don't really get the gravity of it, and I haven't gotten the gravity of how long he's been there, and I'm just, it's, some of it doesn't feel earned, but I do think so much of that also is like they're really grasping and taking huge shots with this story. So like, I don't hold it against them a ton, but yeah, like, and then I'll just say that like this issue specifically, I thought that the like multi, the like you've got all caps font, then you have bolded all caps font, and then you have all lowercase font and bolded lowercase font, and then you're getting them all like within single bubbles. And it's just fucking aggravating to me because I want to try and get that pronunciation correctly. And you've got like four levels of emphasis at this point that can be done within thought bubbles. And sometimes it's clear and separate, and other times it's just like, can you just fucking make that the same font size? Like, I get it, but like, you got bolded words, like it in a comic where I'm kind of grasping to have a foundation of understanding, that makes it harder for me and takes me out.
It's funny because I don't think we're ever going to agree on that. I think they add to the dialogue for me.
Yeah.
But also I'm just reading them quiet and loud. I'm not getting any more nuanced than that. Like, they're almost like thought bubbles.
Exactly. Right? There like are almost. Ways within comics that we can do that. Well, or there are even bubbles. Ways within bubbles that they could separate those things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That didn't bother me. I mean,
it literally is just changing from small font to large font and bold font, like trips me up every time.
I think the thing that bothers me the most about this, other than it being like just so hardcore into the ethereal, squishy, kind of heady Morrison stuff that turns me off from Morrison sometimes, is like, this is a very important issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an annual.
Yeah.
And they don't do that anymore. So why the fuck are we doing that with this? And like, this is an important issue.
And they
of this
did
comic.
Announce that really loud with the last issue. You know,
I don't
like,
care.
Yeah, yeah. And I agree. It's not a thing. I don't hold it against comics when they do that. Like, I would prefer they do that and make the annual feel more part of the story than it being like a collection of things that are going across multiple series and stuff. Like,
yeah, but when
I like
you,
that less.
When you do that on two of your titles and not on 19 of your titles, then
line
like
one.
that's unfair. That's a moving target for the reader and the stores.
And you know, they're like, the longer this has gone on, the less likable Wally has been for me, which isn't a deal breaker or anything, but it's just like his priorities are out of whack and he's forgetting shit. And it's, you know, I'm still very interested. Django, I find your response very interesting because you've been the loudest champion of this series for the most part. There's been a couple that I've given like tens to and stuff, but it's, you know, I gave this issue an 8. I didn't think it was bad, and I thought they did pretty well with the art limitations they had to. I'm not having any problem with like the kind of far-reaching Morrisonian concepts that they're doing in here. I love the idea, like, you know, they mentioned like no justice, and I was like, that was the Scott Snyder thing, right? And like, there was a hole in the source wall, which I really didn't like, and there's this whole area beyond it, but this kind of recalibrates that, and it's sort of like, no, this is like the end of the observable frequencies, and there's, you know, an infinite number of frequencies beyond that, which is the other side of the source wall. I was like, oh, that's way more graspable to me than the idea of what Scott Snyder was trying to do, which was like they made a hole in the source wall and then bad got
like,
in. Or
it's a retcon of a retcon of a retcon of a way to describe a thing that's undescribable.
Yeah.
And they're doing that. They even mention it in this issue. They're like, oh yeah, well, you know, every year or two we talk about how the Speed Force is messing something else up and nobody can agree.
Yeah.
Like, kind of a dig at comics themselves almost.
Right. They were clearly doing that. And even with like the guy, the paper folding guy. But I liked the sort of the idea of like emotions seem to be these like things given form that he's killed a bunch of, but they're actually emotions in a manifested form. It's like, why do they go to old people? And it's like, well, old people have had more lives and experience and more capacity to feel greater thing. Like, I really liked all of that. Roman, where were you on this issue? I mean, there was Mirror Master. I know you're a Mirror Master fan.
I am, though it was kind of, because not all writers write him with trying to capture his accent. So when somebody does write him with his accent, it's a little harder to read him.
Right.
Because you tend to forget that he's Australian, or I guess Australian is what he's probably supposed to be. I kind of feel the same as both of you guys at once. I thought it was kind of in some ways a weak issue compared to the other issues. I didn't care as much in this issue about the characters as in the previous issues, but it was really important. And it was a fun adventure. I reached a point where I just had to like kind of remind myself, well, go with the flow.
Yeah.
Because it's all over the place, and I don't want to. And I was starting to get a little too bogged down and trying to decipher every little artistic detail. And
yeah.
And I had to just go with it. Just speed
enjoy
force
it.
Flow
yeah.
with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just pay Diodato to do all the panels.
See, I have enjoyed Diodato's writing, but I don't, or drawing, but I don't. I think it's an artistic flourish to things, but I don't think it's made things like easier to comprehend or anything. Like
no, but it's made them consistent. And two people tried to ape it in here, and they did it not as good as he does.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. It's.
But I did like the brain of the
Sorry,
general.
Yeah, the brain. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little distracting because sometimes the different, and I didn't pay attention to who was doing what. What artist was doing what, but yeah, that inconsistency kind of started throwing me a little bit until I decided that okay, the visual inconsistency is matching the thematic inconsistency of traveling via the Speed Force through the universe, I suppose.
And like a Flash comic that is supposed to have Wally as the protagonist, like he's like the least compelling character in this for me.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, he really is.
Yeah,
I was surprised that I cared more about a character I've never cared about before. That I think I don't even know her name. The Flash of China, I think is
yeah, the purple is. One. Purple,
yeah, yeah.
So yeah, I gave it an 8. It's still a series I like a lot, but like it goes from being like a 10 series to a series that like I feel frustrated by and on the verge of trying to decide whether I want to continue or not. Like even when it's quality, I'm just sort of like, God damn it, like. I really don't like this letterer.
I gave it a 6. My least favorite issue of the series, and it's a bummer because I really like the rest of it. But that betrayal of having this be something that so many things happen in, and have it be so opaque and with so many artists, like some of that's meta bullshit that I should just get over with. But I should just get over. But I don't. I'm mad at it. What do you give it, Roman?
I'll split the difference. I'll give it a 7.
Nice.
That's an average of 7, boys.
Yeah, actually, of the DC annuals this week, my favorite one was Harley
Quinn. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, it is just worth mentioning it's Sunday at the time of recording this a little bit later than normal because we've all been at the store doing free comic book day kind of nonstop since Friday. We had a blast. It was a huge success. Mm-hmm. Tons of people were in there. One of our bigger days of the year, and it's just so fun. So a huge thank you to everyone that came out, and a huge thank you to everyone that came and helped. It's really cool. It's just a wonderful experience, and it allows comic shops to kind of engage with the community in a way that they don't normally get to. So that was a blast for us, and I hope anyone listening who doesn't live in Bellingham, if there are any of you, that you got to a comic shop and you got to get some free comics and bask in that sort of fun glory that is Free Comic Book Day.
Everything Jeff just said.
Yeah. Good times. Yeah. It's hard to, you know, any job you've got, it's easy to start to resent it and feel like, God, why do I do that? But it was awesome. Jane and I were talking to another retailer that we love yesterday, Shannon Merritt. And it's, you can't even dislike this job. Working in comics, it's so good.
Free Comic Book Day is so much setup and so much work the day of, and we stretch it out into 2 days, and we don't even do that much for the day. It's just like tearing the store apart and rearranging it and scheduling 1,000 people to work, like no big deal. Some stores do like whole block parties and stuff, and I can't even imagine that, but like it is so rewarding. It's too intense. And it's too long, and we're all starving, and all just having a great time for 8 hours straight.
And it's just an awesome to get to do something that means that much to people that you don't get to see very often or maybe at all. So really cool. Everybody, if you haven't gone to one, make sure you get out to one next year for Saturday in May. But on that note, thanks for sticking with us for 350 episodes. It's a great time every week, no matter how I'm feeling before the podcast. Once I get in here and hear what Roman ate that day, it's just a joy. So if you want to send us an email or a voicemail like Will and Andrew did this week, you can do that by sending an email with words or an audio message attached to it to jeff@thecomicsplace.com. We sincerely appreciate it every time anyone does, even if you don't think that we do. We genuinely do. Tell us about what you did for Free Comic Book Day. Tell us what you love about it or what you don't like about it. Or ask us a question. What do we hate about it? Or do it whatever you want. Ask us what we all had for breakfast today. Doesn't matter, but shoot us a message. We love hearing from folks. I'll see all of you folks in 350 more episodes when we'll be recording it live at the Shakedown, I'm sure, for episode 700. We'll
probably be live at Benaroya Hall by then, buddy.
That's true. That's true. And at the time of listening,
Hall H.
This Thursday, May 9th, I will be playing a show at the Shakedown with some of my best buddies. So if you're hearing this and you want to come, Shakedown, 9 o'clock, Bellingham, Washington. It'll be fun.
Come buy him a drink, but not until after the show.
Yeah, I don't drink before shows. I don't do any drugs before shows. I got to make sure I'm sharp or else I'll be the bad guy.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Roman, anything you want to say before we go?
We sure love comics, and we love people that love comics.
Yeah, and you know what? We love a lot of the people that don't also. But and then everybody, obviously, we didn't say it at the beginning, but hashtag Team Kendrick Lamar this week and next week. It's an important thing for us to say. So, all right,
and
everybody.
Listen to our podcast, The Data Bros, where we'll talk a little bit more about Free Comic Book Day.
And you can hear about Jeff's great foible. It'll be fun.
It's pretty fun.
See you then. Bye.